You heard about this guy, didn't you? Went to seminary and you heard about it, didn't you? Went out. Well, this reminded me of it when I got up here. He went to seminary and they don't hear this over the recorder. He really couldn't talk. It just terrified him to get up in front of a group. And finally, after a couple years in seminary, they gave him this little church. Actually, just one Sunday, he went out to preach in this little country church, and they had a podium like this. And he got up. You already heard it, haven't you, Tom? Okay, we'll pass that. He got up front, and he had a sermon memorized and everything. First one he'd ever preached, and it started out, "Behold, I come." So he said it. And then just hearing it so terrified him, he thought, "Boy, I didn't think I'd sound like that." But he thought, 2 years of seminary wasted. No, he says, "I'm going to start over." So he took a deep breath and says, "Behold, I come." And he just, man, his mind was absolutely blank. He thought, "I'll start over. They'll think I'm trying to make a point." So he starts. He says, "Behold, I come." And when he hit this, it was so unstable, he went right over the front and lit right in the lap of an elderly lady. And he was just, man. He says, "I don't know what to say." She says, "That's all right, young man. I should have known you were coming. You warned me 3 times. You know, I brought my family out here to eat at the picnic yesterday or Monday. And really, I wanted to check out the menu a little because this meat shortage is really something. I preached at a banquet last week. And they were so hard up for meat, they had hamburgers. And now, I don't say the meat was bad, but I lifted up the bun of mine, and there was a cockroach standing on the meat eating a Rolaid. But I hear you're faring a little better here. You know, the meat's thinner, but at least it's good stuff, you know. And Bids, you all come from Iowa, and I know it's sort of flat back there, up there north where you rich people live. You heard about the couple who moved out here from Iowa, and because he'd been telling his wife all along, he says, "You know, honey, you know, life is pretty short, and we just better move to the mountains because we both like the mountains." And so they did. They finally sold her house, and he quit his job and moved out here. And first Sunday came up, and he thought, "Boy, let's just find out about the mountains. You know, let's just drive up, we'll find a little road, we'll take off and just learn from the grassroots up." So they did that, and they found this little logging road going up, and pretty soon, boy, the road got narrower and narrower, and the cliff steeper and steeper, and there was a little panic. Down inside, he thought, "Boy, we can't back up, we can't," you know, he didn't know quite what to do, but then they were greatly relieved because they came up behind a pickup, and it just had a plywood box on the back, and not a camper, and so, boy, they thought, "Well, at least if we have trouble, there'll be two of us, you know," But they went a little ways. Pretty soon the pickup started slowing down, and boy, they thought, "We've had it. Boy, if he stops, what will we do?" And pretty soon the pickup stopped, and the driver of the pickup jumped out and picked up this big rock, went around beating on the side of this plywood box, threw the rock down, and jumped back in. And man, they took off with a good clip. Now they went a couple, 3 miles. Pretty soon started slowing down again, and slowed down half a mile. And the guy jumped out as soon as he stopped, and he picked up this board and went around, beat on the plywood box, threw it down, jumped back in, and took off again. Good clip. Well, he says, "I don't understand this." He says, "If he stops again, I'm going to find out." And sure enough, you know, went away, started slowing down again. He stopped, and as soon as he jumped out, this guy ran up and says, "What's the deal? You know, you go away, you slow down, you stop, you beat on the box, you go away, you stop, you beat up. He said, "I'm really sorry, fella, but, you know, I only have on the back here, I have a ton of pigeons, and I only have a half-ton pickup. Unless I keep half of them flying, we're never going to make it." So, so the key is keep moving here. The topic, I guess, this morning is evangelism. And you heard about the guy who got out of Bible school, actually. He didn't make it to seminary, and so he took this little country church, and he was walking down the road. He didn't have a car or anything, and he thought, I got to get out in evangelism. He'd heard that all through Bible school, and so he was just walking down the road. There's a farm on the side, and this farmer was there in the corner cutting weeds of the fence, So he says, "Hey, mister, are you in the Christian family?" Guy says, "Son, 2 more farms right on down on the left. They live there. You can't miss it." Boy, the guy thought, "Man, I blew it." He says, "Oh, you lost." He says, "Now, son, I've lived here nigh on to 46 years, and I'm sure I'm not lost." Boy, he thought, that approach didn't work. So he got an idea. He says, "You ready for the judgment day?" He said, "Well, when is it?" He says, I don't know. Could be today. Could be tomorrow. He said, well, son, when you find out, make sure you let me know, because my wife will want to go both days. Well, see, there's in evangelism, there's all kinds of approaches, and some work, some don't. But here's what I think we should do this morning a little bit, and that's, let's see, the weight of this cuts your head off the time that, you know, time this gets over. This is a heavy sermon, so I better get it back there. You can see that, can't you? It's really heavy. So it's like, I think I'm learning some things or being exposed to some things that are sort of new to me, and that is this. If you preach on faith, or if you have workshops on faith, it won't do much good if people have the wrong concept of God. They can have all the faith, they have a truckload of faith, but if they have the wrong concept of God, if they think God is not good and God is not loving and God really won't work for me, it doesn't matter how much faith you have, it won't work. Or if you talk about prayer, you can have all the little prayer lists, you can know pray in Jesus' name, you can know all the mechanics of prayer, but unless you know what God's attitude is about you praying, it won't work. And you can go down almost every one of those. Like direction. I see some people trying to get guidance for their life. Boy, they try every trick in the book. When they pray, they squeeze their eyelids tight, grit their, you know, clench their fists, thinking, boy, the harder I struggle, the more God will work. But see, they know all the mechanics, but they don't understand about God. See, there's a whole other thing we need to understand, and I think evangelism is the same thing. Just on the matter of the gospel, I think we should look at the gospel first, because I think if we understand something basically about the gospel, evangelism is a lot easier. All right, one thing, in Romans 1:16, Paul says this. He says, I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God. Now, what is the power of God in that verse? The gospel. Have you ever thought, how can I get more power in my life? How many have thought that? How can I get more religious power, or gospel power, or whatever? Everybody thinks that, isn't that right? Or you think, now why does Billy Graham have it, or why does our pastor have it, or why does... Well, here's what it says. See, it says the gospel is the power of God. It didn't say it's like the power of God, and it didn't say it's next to it. It didn't say God, you know, might make it. It says it is the power of God. So if you want the power of God and you have the gospel, you have the same thing. All right, 1 Corinthians 1:18 says this. Paul was talking to the people of Corinth, and he says, for the preaching of the cross is to them that perish foolishness, but to us who believe, it is the power of God. Now, what is that, it is the power of God, there? The preaching of the cross, the gospel again. Isn't that amazing? It says, it is the power of God. Okay, if we go on over to 1 Thessalonians chapter 1, very interesting. I think Paul wanted to make a point here. He put it in the first chapter of his books when he talked about the gospel. 1 Thessalonians, he says, our gospel came not in word only, but also in power and in conviction by the Holy Spirit, because you knew what manner of men we were among you. Well, here's what. Your manner of life adds evidence to the power of the gospel. Now, people cannot understand the gospel by just seeing. See, they have to hear the gospel, and then if your life is changed in accordance with what you say, they'll see, oh yeah, the gospel is the power of God. And that's what Paul said. He says, it came in word, but it didn't come only. He says, our life was different, and that's why you saw that there was evidence. But the gospel by itself is still the power of God. Now, if we can get that clearly ingrained in our mind, we're going to be different. Because a lot of times you think, well, the gospel is so simple. That's right. And if it's not simple when you're presenting it, you got something wrong with you. It's not the gospel. See, because Paul had great concern for the people. He says, I am afraid that you have departed from what? The 12 points of the gospel. No, what did he say? Yeah, the simplicity of the gospel. See, he says, boy, if it gets complicated, you got something wrong. He says, don't depart from that simple thing. Because that's what people desperately need. I have a barber down here, and he says, boy, I like Billy Graham. Man, he says, I can understand everything he says. Well, it's very interesting. See, Billy, I'm sure everybody's heard Billy over and over. It's pretty simple. You know, he gives about 5 or 6 verses and tells a batch of stories. I mean, he doesn't give very much Bible. It just happens to be every time he uses Bible, he says, the Bible says. Most fundamentals think it's all Bible, but it's not. He just gives five or six verses, and he tells a batch of stories to illustrate it, because he wants to make sure that people understand it. See, he keeps it simple, and I really think that's one of the main keys to Billy's, you know, great success, is because he keeps it so simple. See, one thing, when you come to the gospel, see, the gospel is a creative force by itself. Now, see, one thing, it creates new life in unsaved people. All right? Just think of somebody who think, boy, they were so messed up, and when you see them now, they're so drastically changed. And in fact, people can't even figure out how they change so much. People who get saved, boy, I'm so different. I know, I talked to a rug layer a couple of days ago. He told me about how he was raised. He and his sister were orphans, and until the time he was six, he was raised in an orphanage where they would lock him in a baby bed. The only reason, with a lock, and the only reason they'd take him out was to feed him and change him until he was 6 years old. Well, he came out with a lot of fight in him. I mean, he was going to prove that he could make it. Well, his goal was to make $1 million. Well, a year and a half ago, he ended up, let's see, $48,000 in debt. But he became a Christian a year and a half ago, and he's totally different. He says, I see that $1 million, it didn't matter. Would he make it or lose it or have it? Or he said, because that's not the... See, his whole goal has changed. Even with all that fouled up background that put a lot of fight in him to prove the world he could make do something or make something, his life has totally turned around. Totally. See, so it will create new life, see, in unsaved people. Another thing it'll do, it'll create new courage in the life of Christians. Now, about the deadest bunch of Christians you can be around is just find a bunch of Christians who are saved and who aren't involved with the gospel at all. I mean, they are dead on their wheels. I mean, a lot of churches like it, you can almost tell when you walk in there. See, when people get involved with the gospel, some way there's a difference. And Paul talks about this. He says, there's fellowship with Christ, there's fellowship with other Christians. But then in Philippians, he says, he was with us in the fellowship of the gospel. Have you ever been around a group of Christians who are getting out the gospel? Man, they're fun to be with. Isn't that right? How many have found that? How many have found that change different? You've been around Christians a lot, but pretty soon you get with a group that are getting out the gospel and they're totally different. How many have found that? Isn't that right? Because there's a fellowship with the gospel of people who are involved in it that makes Christians different. Now, I don't understand that, but it does work. See, the gospel in itself is simple. The gospel of working in unsaved people is simple. And when people get the gospel out, it's simple. I mean, it really changes them. Now, I used to run the high school conferences here for 3 or 4 years. Well, boy, we weren't very experienced at it. And it was so different every year. But we found out that really the changing tide came when we rented some buses and would take them up to Estes Park out witnessing. In fact, some of them were so frightened. Don, if you think you were frightened, these kids would skip out. They wouldn't get on the bus. Oh, well, they wouldn't get on the bus. At least you went. Some of these wouldn't get on the bus. But those other kids, they'd come back and tell all these wild stories. And one year we had it, the 15 people who skipped out, they felt so bad they didn't get on it, they skipped out the next day and went down on the street to witness just so they'd get in on some of the fun. They thought they got cheated, and they did. See, and really, in your Christian life, see, if you're not involved with the gospel, you're getting cheated because it is the power of God. It'll not only change you, it'll change everybody around, and it'll change the group you're with. Now, see, that sounds so simple. See, you think, but there's more complex. There must be something deeper and more. No. See, that does work. Another thing it'll do, it'll create hope in old age. I thought I'd say this for a few people. Don, you all right. Very interesting. Our church, the class I'm in, went Christmas caroling to some old folks' home. Boy, one of them was totally different. It was run by Christians. I mean, the attitude, when we walked in, we realized, hey, this is different. There was hope around. See, I have some friends back in Iowa, and they've retired. And they were telling my folks, they said, well, what can we do? We don't need money. And there's just nothing to do. Well, my dad just retired, 6 weeks ago or something? Man, he's lost 25 pounds in 6 weeks since he retired. So you know what he was doing before he retired. Not much. You know, that's okay. He worked for the government, you know. I mean, that's... You know, feeding at the public trough, you know. But, I mean, he's got so much to do. Retiring, he's busier now 6 weeks later than he was before. Because he's out preaching. I just heard the other day he's preaching in a church, and he'd take a little church as a camp for a preacher, and then when it gets built up, then a preacher comes in, and he goes to another. And they go down there or help organizing the layman's conference in Kansas. I mean, they're having so much fun. But see, the gospel is the key, because you have something that's really worthwhile. And it never runs out. See, over and over and over. See that song? I love to tell a story because I know it's true. You know what? And people who know it best, what does it say about it? They want to hear it like the rest. Isn't that right? Some way. How many have listened to Billy? When's Billy Graham? No, he comes on in September. How many listened to him last time he was on a 3-day special? Why'd you do that? You know the gospel, don't you? Okay. Here's what Billy went 16 weeks at Madison Square Garden. Every night except Monday, I think, for 16 weeks. And a guy came up afterward and says, Billy, you know, I've heard you every night you preach, and you preach the same sermon. Billy says, thank you very much. You're right. Isn't that amazing how people come back and back and back? Because, see, the gospel is the power of God, and it will create things in the life of Christians. See, another thing it'll do, it'll change people's courage. Now, we had a good friend in Lincoln, Nebraska, Brenda Williams. Now, she was from southern Illinois. She was more hillbilly than Buck Owens, if you can believe that. She's now, let's see, the secretary to what? The director of Wycliffe Bible Translators in South America. I think, man, how did she, you know, from when I knew her back in Lincoln and what she's doing now, I thought, you know, that's a big transition. But see, the gospel will change you. It really will if you'll get involved in it and believe it. Another thing happens with the gospel. Organizations who stick with getting out the gospel have a special blessing from God. Now, we say that God is no respecter of person, he's no respecter of organization, he's no respecter of systems and all that. But one thing we do have to say is that there is a special blessing from God for organizations to stick with the gospel. I mean, history has bore it out. We have it right now. If we go down, organizations that are really doing something and growing and multiplying, it's those who stick with the gospel. The Billy Graham organization. I mean, it's amazing the things they're doing. See, do you know what the largest Christian publication in the world is? Decision Magazine. Think, why is that? What does Billy know about that? Well, the blessing of God, that's all. Who has the largest primetime TV? Billy Graham. Largest film ministry? Billy Graham. Gabriel, don't we have anybody else down there? Well, yeah, there's some others down there, but this Billy fella, see, every time his mouth opens, the gospel comes out. Oh, well, stick with Billy then, see? I mean, that's the way that works out. I mean, you would think there would be people around, other people who, see, he's counseled every president since Truman. You'd think surely there would be somebody else around to divide up the work a little. But Billy, see, he just sticks with the gospel, that's all. The one sermon. Or if we look at Oral Roberts, I mean, he sticks with it. Listen to him on TV. Now, it's not always as clear as Billy, but, you know, everybody doesn't have the same gift. He knows how to build universities and things like that that Billy doesn't know. See, so he does have some other things. But he does stick with that. Or if we talk about, I think, you know, 20 years from now, when we read about this age, we'll probably read about Billy Graham, Oral Roberts, and Campus Crusade. Because we do have a phenomenal thing going on with Campus Crusade. They're, what, 21 years old now. They have, what, 4,000 on staff? They had this rally down in Dallas last year. For what, 85,000. And they're planning one this fall in England, 25,000. They're planning one in Korea, 300,000. You think, how did that happen? Well, in California, a friend of mine was in a meeting with Bill Bright. And someone says, now, Bill, we've had the Lay Institute on Evangelism in our church. We've had it in the city in Oakland. And we've been to Arrowhead. When do we have the next sermon? And do you know what Bill Bright says? There's not another. Now, Bill Bright's been to 2 seminaries. I bet he could whip up another sermon. But see, he believes, stick with the gospel. And no matter what you go to with Campus Crusade, the Expo 72, it was everybody get on the bus, get the gospel out. Now, I went to the layman's conference down there that had in Expo. They came up to about 11:30 in the morning, And everybody had a little section of town. They gave you a street. How many were down there? Oh, good. They gave you a little section of town with addresses, and, you know, you had some Spanish tracks, some, all depends which end of town you were in and everything. Now, remember, this is a layman's conference. There was old rich folks like you. You know, same kind of conference. Yeah, like you, Corny. Yeah, you're, Corny was looking around seeing, who are those rich folks? Come on, Corny. We know you're one of them. You know what they said? Now, they hadn't had coffee break. It was 11:30. And someone says, they were talking about dividing up which bus you'd get on and all that and cars. And someone says, when do we eat lunch? He said, well, this conference is kind of way, I mean, the people you have are way on the outside of Dallas, so we won't have time for lunch today because, I mean, this is so important that, you know, if we eat lunch, we won't get to do this, so we'll do this. Everybody on the bus. That was it. I thought, man, see, they really believe that. You know, if you happen to skip lunch, you don't get a coffee break. That's first, number one. Well, there's just a special blessing from God. I can't figure that out. Except God chooses to bless those kind of organizations above and beyond, you know, what we can understand. Or take New Tribes Missions. They started, 29 years ago. I talked to Ken Johnson, head of New Tribes. He said, let me tell you the hardest decision we had to make in New Tribes. They started boot camp. You know, this thing that Wycliffe, most people have heard about Wycliffe boot camp. Actually, it was started by New Tribes Mission in California. He says, you know, we used to take all our new candidates, you know, way out in the wilderness. But he says, you know, we found out something. If you leave them out there 10 weeks without exposure to unsaved, you know, to get the gospel out, he says, they sort of lose their heart to be a missionary. So he says, we had to close down our first boot camp and move it in close to where people were so they could go evangelize. He says, no, it was hard, but he says, that's important. I think, man. And see, sometimes they spend 3 or 4 years on the field just trying to find the tribe they're going to reach. But it's very interesting. They have some phenomenal things happening. 85% of their missionary kids end up back on the mission field as missionaries. They have the highest amount of any missionary organization in the world. In fact, they have high schools of their missionary kids, and they go out and start churches in foreign countries. Because, first of all, he says, we want missionaries and evangelists, and if you happen to fly a plane, fine. You know, we'll try to use you in that field. But if you don't, you know, he says, we want missionaries. But, see, in the 28 years they've been going, they're probably the largest foreign mission society for the youngest. They have 800 missionaries on the field and 600 in full-time training right now. That's really amazing. Because it's a hard field to go to, you know. It's to live in those grass huts and all that stuff they do. Whew. Hard. The fastest growing church in the U.S., you know what it is? Coral Ridge Presbyterian Church, Dr. Jim Kennedy's church. What's their plan? 2x2, door to door. Now, I mean, you go down everything that's really happening, and it's people who stick with the gospel. So whether it's you individually, or you as your church, or you as your Sunday school class, or whatever organization you're in, I mean, this is where it's happening. See, another thing. If you're involved in the gospel, you have the excitement of seeing your life being used in an amazing way to see other people's lives changed, to give them hope. A lot of people walking around with no hope today. Now, if they sold black contacts, they wouldn't sell very good because most people have them in already. I mean, the world looks pretty black to everybody. See, and they do need hope. I mean, that's the thing they're looking for. Is there something in the future? Now, if you just look around, how many people are buying horoscopes and, you know, having everything read? I just read one in the Sunday paper. It was a computerized horoscope, $3. And it says it's not like your worthless horoscope that you have in your daily paper. I thought, oh, now which one is right? But, oh, they're selling. Let's see. What did I read? Let's see. There's 2,800 newspapers carry those columns now in the U.S. So you can go read your horoscope. And I thought, now that worthless one, because I was in a town here in the city manager's office about 2 weeks ago, and the assistant city manager says, well, yesterday I had to go home at 2 and read my horoscope before I went out on a job. I thought, and he's reading the worthless one in our daily newspaper. I said, I can see why that city's so fouled up. I think the people down here are too. I'm not sure. I wouldn't bet on it. But See, people are they're grasping at everything they can grasp at for some hope. But see, with the gospel there is hope. Because it lines up your future. It also lines you up day by day that God will be with you. See, that's the hope. See, we have it. And we're not passing it around like we should. And if we start, see, the gospel is the power of God. That's what makes it work. Now, there's a lot of ways of getting out the gospel, and I don't think I need to go into those, but I think there is this. I think we really missed the boat. Because last year when I traveled around campuses, every time I'd get a little Christian group together, I'd have a show of hands. I'd say this. Last time you went out witnessing, just think of it. Last time, or you went to give a testimony to someone, or went to talk to someone, did you go out to sow seed, or did you go out to reap a harvest? Okay, think. Think last time you went out. Or last time you talked to someone. How many went out to sow seed? How many went out to reap the harvest? How many don't have the foggiest idea what I'm talking about? Okay. You can't vote three times. How many went out to sow seed? Let's see those again. How many went out to reap the harvest? What's the difference? You who went out to reap the harvest. How many? What's the difference? There is a difference.
You're expecting that person to come to Christ.
You're expecting that person to come to Christ.
You have that feeling.
Okay. Now, what if you don't have that feeling? Could you still go out to reap harvest?
Yeah, you could.
What would be the difference?
I think you're going to have to. I think it's like a team, a football team. If you go out to play the game, the chances of winning are less than if you
in other words, it's not just in playing the game then. Okay. How do you know whether you're a reaper or a sower? The reason I use the word reaper, because that's what John 4 uses. How do you know which you are? Experience. Does it have to do with calling? Gift? Ah, gift or, now wait a minute, gift and training is different. You use both. That's like saying black and white. What are you going to say there? Gift or training? How many think gift? How many think training? Ah, oh, you're voted down, I'm afraid. 2-1. Who said training over here? Okay, why do you say training?
I think that everyone has to develop. That's what counts.
Yeah, could start out as a gift and then with a little training, develop. All right, so you're half right. You still can be encouraged because your wife was sort of... I saw her head going the other way. So you better buy that Karen and book, Sister Tom. Let's all turn over to John 4, shall we? John chapter 4. John chapter 4, let's start with verse 35. It says, "Say not ye, there are yet 4 months, and then cometh the harvest. Behold, I say unto you, lift up your eyes and look on the fields, for they are white, already to harvest." Now, where are those white harvests? Everywhere. Is that fact, or? But what about your neighborhood? How open are they? How many got a real open neighborhoods they'd like to have you just run over there and share the gospel with them? How many have that? How many are convinced that your neighborhood is closed? Come on, I'll see those hands. I want to see them. How many don't know whether they're closed or open, but you think they're probably closed? The first statement was best. You don't know, like mine. Well, see, here's what it says. It says, what? The harvest is white. Isn't that right? Ready. But see, you say, but you don't know my neighbors. I mean, I've heard Lawrence Annie talk about it. He says, he used to work for the Billy Graham Crusade, and every crusade they go to, they'd say, well, now, Lauren, we know it was down there in Kansas City, it was different. I mean, but you've never been up here in Omaha. Boy, it's tougher. I mean, you know, then they, you know, God had come blessing Omaha, and they go to Seattle. Well, now, they're in Omaha, it's different. See, but Seattle is, you know, lowest church attendance, blah, blah, you know. He says, every crusade, we heard exactly the same thing. Well, it's tougher here. And that's the way we all feel. Well, my neighborhood is tougher. It's a really bad neighborhood. That's why I live there. You know, or whatever we say, see. We just think that here. God says the harvest is white. Now, listen to the next verse. And he that... What does that bell mean, anyway? Does that mean we're going to be ejected or coffee break? 10 minutes, oh, and then coffee break. Oh, trumpets, okay. I'll be done. If you can't say it in 10 minutes, you can't say it, but I'll probably take 20. So, verse 36. All right. And he that reapeth receiveth wages and gathereth fruit unto life eternal, that both he that soweth and he that reapeth may rejoice together. So sowers and reapers are the same, according to that verse. Is that right? Read the verse. Everybody read the verse. One's just as important as the other. Because the next verse says, herein is the saying true, one soweth, another reapeth. Someone said something.
A reaper gets paid.
Ah, there is a difference. Reaper gets paid. Is that right?
They're both receiving wages.
You said it, I didn't. Defend yourself. Huh? How many heard him say it? Come on. Ah, right. Oh, okay. I heard him.
It says here, he who reaps receives wages.
Somebody have a green Bible? One of those green? Read it in the green Bible. What do you... Yeah, that's brown, but it's okay.
For it's true that one soul, someone else reaps. I sent you to reap...
No, I want 30... You're reading 38, didn't you? I want 36.
36. The reapers will be paid good wages, but will be gathering eternal souls in the granaries of heaven.
Ah. One thing, he gets wages. Okay, let's... The next one says... And herein is saying true, one soweth, another reapeth. In other words, it's a two-way thing to get the job done. But listen to the next verse, 38. I sent you to reap. Ah. How many didn't know that verse was in there? Come on now. I mean, I didn't know it until a couple, 3 years ago I read it. Now, hey, see, that's a command there. I sent you to reap. Now, we do need seed sowers. But the big need is for reapers, people to go reap the harvest. In Matthew 9, it says, pray ye therefore the Lord of harvest that he will send forth laborers into his harvest. And the verse before that says the harvest is white, but there's no laborers. Seed sowers, we have plenty of them. But the big need around is for laborers in the harvest field, reapers, people to lead people to Christ, because that's what 36 talks about, and gathers fruit unto life eternal. See, that's the big need. Now, what makes the difference between a sower and a reaper? What's the difference? Okay, now, but, I mean, say we're out presenting the gospel. Am I a sower or a reaper? Okay, what changes me into a reaper?
Pop
what question? Yeah, that's right. Ask them. If all else fails, ask them. I mean, really, you will be absolutely amazed at the people who will say, or you ask them, do you see any reason why you wouldn't want to receive Christ now? Well, shall we bow our heads and you can pray and receive Christ now? Would you like to do that? What would stop or hinder you from praying right now? It'd be amazing the people you find. Some of them will frighten you. They'll be so eager. I know I was on a little trip in Nebraska, and this guy, his wife came to church, and he kept saying, I'll never go to that church. His wife was telling us that. You know, he said, well, we couldn't get him anywhere, so I thought, let's go see him. So about 9:30 at night, we went down and see him, and he redid antiques or something. And so we talked about that a little while, and I said, well, what do you think about all this church stuff? Your wife's, I don't want to get involved. And I said, well, and I got a little track out of my pocket. I use that blue Billy Graham one. Do you know the steps of peace with God? It's the cheapest one to buy is the reason I use it. So I said, well, let me show you a little booklet here. I says, it'll only take 4 minutes and we'll just read it over. Is that okay? Oh, yeah, that's okay. See, now, how many use those booklets? Or some kind of book, the four spiritual laws, a lot of them. Now, there's just a couple rules you need to remember. Generally, just read it over to them. Now, if you get somebody with a PhD or something, buddy like that, just read slower. I mean, it'll work out okay, that's all. I mean, if you can just keep those rules in mind, you'll make out okay, see? So, after he read it over, it came to the thing and says, the question is, would you like to receive Christ now? He says, I don't know. Well, I says, you understand it? Says, yeah, I understand it. He said, well, I don't want to do it just out of doing it. I said, no, I don't want you to. But I said, this is, the thing you need to do. So we talked a little bit. Pretty soon, he was sitting on the couch. Pretty soon, he leaned forward like this. Let's pray. I can hardly believe it. Because then he says, well, if I wait till tomorrow morning, I won't do it. So let's do it now. Now, this was room full. Some of his friends, some, you know, were there. I was up in Canada. And they told me, now, boy, when you get across the border, leave all the stories behind. Because it's tougher up here. That's right. I mean, three or four people told me that. And they're my friends. And so I thought, well, they know I haven't been up there. Who am I? First guy I went out and talked to, I said, would you like to receive Christ? Oh, yeah, this is what I've been looking for. You mean right here? It was in the dining room, people walking. Oh, yeah, right here. Yeah, I'd like to do it. Then I was in a dorm meeting. There was about 15 people around. After we had the dorm meeting, it was just discussion. So a guy, clear on the... It was kind of an oval bunch I was talking to. Probably 15 guys around. This guy was clear on the other side. Oh, he was back. It was the second row from the back there. And he says, well, I've been working on meditation. I work on it half an hour a day. I said, well, does it work? He said, well, I don't know. I've only done it for a week. And I said, well, let me tell you something that will work. And I gave him the verse, the peace that passes understanding. I said, that's what God will give it to you. You don't even have to work at it. He'll just give it to you. You know, and the thought entered my mind, why don't you ask him? I thought, oh, in front of all his friends, he wouldn't want to. You know, I was going over that in my mind. Pretty soon, I said, would you like to receive Christ? He says, please. I says, and I was kind of shocked. I says, you mean here? And he says, please. So I says, okay, the rest of you guys, he wants to receive Christ, so let's all bow our heads. You know, he bowed his head and prayed. But see, if you just ask him, I mean, it's surprising the people that will say yes because they really want to. Now, another thing, if we don't ask them if they want to receive Christ, I think we do them a big injustice because making the decision to receive Christ is part of the gospel. See, now, how many times have you given them the gospel and then he says, well, I hope you think this over? How many have done that? I've done that 8 billion times or more. See, but the problem is, becoming a Christian, you don't do it by thinking it over. You become a Christian by making a decision. So when you say, think it over, they think, boy, I don't have it clear in my mind. I guess I'll never be a Christian. Or you say, well, I hope you read this track over. Or you say, well, I have this book I wish you'd read. So you read the book and they're still not Christian. They can't figure it out. See, but if you just ask them, see, that's the key. Now, just because you ask them is no sign God will use you. I think that is the method that sort of ignites or energizes your faith. I think God uses a person because he has his sins confessed and he's controlled by the Spirit. Now, see, I'm not the kind that kind of witness to everybody. There's some people, like Ron York with the Navigators, I mean, he witnesses to everybody. I lived with him a year. He doesn't miss a trick. I mean, he's the kind that if a track falls out of his pocket, someone will come by, you know, 2 days later, pick it up, get saved, and, you know, become a young Billy Graham. I mean, some way, that just works that way with Ron. Now, I'm not that way. I got to make a project of it. Ah, today, go witness. I just don't talk to everybody. So, but I find out most people are like that. They don't talk to everybody. So what I think, with couples, if you got your neighbors or something, make a little project out of it. Start praying. Okay, God, 2 weeks from now, we're going to have them over. So one thing we want to do, we want to be led by your Spirit as to when to talk and what to say. Okay, then when they get over there, say, now, God, I'm available. I don't know much, but I'm available. Okay, then God will start opening up opportunities. I mean, it will work like that. See, it really will work. I know my 20th high school anniversary came up last summer. And so, well, I really had a burden to go to it. So I started praying. Now, God, because most of those, probably 80% of them I hadn't seen since graduation. So I started praying. Now, God, I'm available. Well, now, I wasn't in charge of lining up the reunion because I graduated 42 from the top, down from 80. So I wasn't one of the bright and shiny stars in that class. And I was wondering, how is this going to work out? So I thought, what I'll do, I'll go back a day early. Just tell God I'm available. Well, it happened, the guy who was lining it up, I'd had the privilege of leading the Lord about 5 years before, and he wasn't an officer or anything. He just took charge of it. So it came down the list. It said, roll call in the little program. I said, what's that? He said, well, our principal's going to be back, and we thought I'd roll. He said, but I'm not sure he's going to be back. We haven't heard from him. So I says, hey, why don't I take that? They were looking for something. I didn't know they were looking. I just volunteered. And I thought, I'll make up stories on people and stuff. And, oh, that's a good idea. So I was still praying. I thought, well, okay, I have that much. Well, when I was going, driving down to the country club, by the way, the first time I've ever been in the country club, Knoxville, Iowa, you know. I didn't miss much over all those 20 years, not being there, but I prayed, now, you know, what can I do? And then as I was just driving to the banquet, the idea came, why don't I have everybody stand up and tell what the most significant thing has happened to them in the last 20 years? So we said, and so I talked with this fellow. He said, oh, that's a good idea. So the banquet started at 6:30, and everybody was standing up telling. Very interesting, some of the things they told. We found, you'd be interested in my class. We had three PhDs, three lieutenant colonels, one All-American football player. One-third of them had been divorced at least once. I don't know, it's pretty hard, you know, after they get two or three, it's hard to keep the records on that. But so it's about average. One thing we found out, too, the girls who were plump in high school were fat now. No. Don't say that. That was one thing I was excited, you know. A lot of things. Very interesting. Well, it came up, I thought, I just told, you know, when it came my turn, I just told, you know, how I think most significant for me was giving my life to Jesus Christ and then dedicating myself to sharing this with people. And it was interesting, the people that came up and talked afterwards. And finally, at 11 o'clock, we still weren't on with the hard drinking, which most reunions are under the table by 9:30. Finally, the president, who was in the back, stood up and says, when do we get on with the hard drinking? And everybody was kind of thinking, why do you say that? We're having so much fun. Everybody was sharing. And here, from 6:30 to 11, see, I think the righteous still had charge of the reunion. So if you pray, see, God can turn any situation to your side. I mean, people couldn't believe it. See, that at 11 o'clock, they were still, you know, people weren't drunk, no dances started, and nothing. In fact, there was another reunion downstairs, and at 11 o'clock, when we sort of dismissed, they come up to join us because they couldn't figure out why we were having so much fun. See, so if you want to witness someone, take and make a project of it. Pray. See, ask God, now, how do we get involved in this? And we want to be available. The key is telling God you're available. And then being receptive to the Spirit of God as He leads you on what you should say and when you should say it. And if you do that, which I think, and then you got to decide you're going to do it. Now, God, I'm available to preach the gospel. Not just available to have a dinner. Not just available to invite people over. See, you got to have another, you know, objective in mind. Like, how many know Ralph Merritt from Aurora, Nebraska? Now, he is a gunner. What he does, he calls up people and says, would it be okay if I bring my Bible over tonight and talk to you? He says he rarely gets turned down unless people are going to be gone. Now, I think people know why you're coming, you know, and he does that. And he really gets results. But I'm the kind, see, that has to kind of make a project of pray ahead of time and then say, this is what we're going to do tonight. And then when you're working with people, pray that God will lead you, open the door, you know, give you control of the situation. And people will be responsive. Don't try to sneak up on them. It won't work. You know, it's like going to sell your car to someone and say, well, I'll drop a couple hints and see if he wants to buy it. Boy, my car's nice. Well, that's good. Mine's a wreck. You say, boy, I haven't had much trouble with my car. You're lucky. I've had all kinds of trouble. See, people can't figure that out. And we do that as Christians all the time. What church do you go to? Oh, I don't. You know, and then nothing. See, they can't figure out if you're trying to sneak up on them. Why don't you just ask them? I mean, like the other day, I asked a guy. He says, my grandmother says my name's Italian and Southern Baptist. I said, oh, you're a Christian? Well, yeah. I said, I mean real, bona fide, going to heaven Christian. Well, yeah. Well, I said, that's all I wanted to know. You know, but see, people can't figure it out unless you ask them directly. You can't sneak up on them because they don't know that. Now, it's like this. You probably heard about the guy who was from southern Missouri, got drafted in the army in Korea. And he was really a misfit for the army. He never had on shoes till he got in the army. But he was such a nice guy. You know, he could play the guitar and the banjo and, you know, he could make everybody laugh. And so the company kind of, you know, took the burden to watch out for him. Well, they got over to Korea. I mean, he really had a hard time. He'd forget his belt and his weapon. Just keeping all that stuff was hard. You know, they got over there and they were all lined up on this hill. And pretty soon the Chinese, man, they started coming over like, you know, just in herds. And, the Army did what the Marine Corps called tactical withdrawal. Now, that's the same thing the army says, turn and run like crazy. It's exactly the same thing. See, so they move back one more hill, and they all dug in. Pretty soon they started noticing Charlie was missing. Good night. They couldn't figure it out, and everybody was, where's Charlie, and why didn't you watch out for him, and all that. And the company commander said, hey, you know, this is the way war is, you know. Sometimes you lose them, and you can't... this is the way it is. So he says, we got to get with it, because, you know, night's coming on. Well, pretty soon, they were all dug in, and the sun was really going down, and they saw this group coming up the hill. And they thought, man, those Chinese are really brave coming out, and, you know, it's not quite dark. And they got closer and closer, and everybody's bayonet fixed, weapon, and pretty soon they noticed that one guy with bayonet fixed bringing in about 15 guys. And they got closer and closer, and they ran out there, and it was Charlie. And they said, good night, Charlie. We're sorry we left you. Well, boy, you can count on us to watch. By the way, Charlie, where'd you get all these? He says, man, there's thousands of them out there. Go out and get you a couple. So. Now, on your way home, there's filling stations. You know, there's restaurants. See, go down to the conference office and buy you a batch of those tracks. And do you have the Billy Graham tracks, the blue ones?
Yeah.
Okay, or you have the other one called the Bridge. You say, you know, we just came from a conference, and we saw this most amazing little track. Have you ever seen one of these? Well, let me show it to you. It'll only take you. See, you can give that track in 14 seconds if he's got to pump gas. Or if he doesn't have, you can give it in 4 minutes. You know, just figure out and say, now, read this. Have you ever made this decision? See, because they're everywhere. But remember, the gospel is the power of God, and it will work for you if you decide to work for it. Let's close in prayer. Lord, we're thankful that you have entrusted us with the gospel and that it is the power of God. And we pray that you'd make us faithful ambassadors that we might be involved in your power. And we thank you now in Jesus' name. Amen.